Star Wars, The Last Command by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 2, side 2.
Do we have a follow-up report yet from Governor Staffa?
Yes, sir, Pelion said, pulling it up on his datapad. Skywalker left at the same time as the decoy shuttle, and is presumed to have followed its vector. If so, he'll reach the Poderis system in approximately 30 hours.
Excellent, Thrawn said. He'll undoubtedly report in to Coruscant before he reaches Poderis. His subsequent disappearance should go a long way toward convincing them that they've found the conduit for our clone traffic.
Yes, sir, Pelion said.
Keeping to himself his doubts as to their chances of actually causing Skywalker to disappear. Thrawn presumably knew what he was doing.
One other thing, sir. There was a second follow-up to Staffa's original report, one that came in under an intelligence encrypt code.
From his aide, Fingal, Thrawn nodded. A man with Governor Staffa's casual loyalties practically begs us to assign him a quiet watchdog. Were there any discrepancies with the governor's report?
Just one, sir. The follow-up gave a complete description of Skywalker's contact, a man Staffa had indicated was one of his own agents. Fingal's description strongly suggests the man was, in fact, Talon Karda.
Thrawn exhaled thoughtfully. Indeed. Did Fingal suggest any explanation for Karda's presence in Kallius?
According to him, there are indications that Governor Staffa has had a private trade arrangement with Karda for several years, Pelion said. Fingal reports he was going to have the man picked up for questioning, but was unable to find a way to do so that wouldn't have alerted Skywalker.
Yes, Thrawn murmured. Well, what's done is done, and if smuggling was all that was involved, there's no harm. Still, we can't have random smugglers buzzing around our deceptions, and perhaps accidentally poking holes in them. And Karda has already proved he can be a great deal of trouble.
For a moment, Thrawn gazed in silence at the Oris sector map. Then he looked up at Pelion.
But for now, we have other matters to deal with. Prepare a course for the Poderis system. Captain, I want the Chimera there within 40 hours.
He smiled thinly.
And signal the garrison commander that I expect him to have a proper reception prepared by the time we arrive. Perhaps in 2 or 3 days' time, we'll have an unexpected gift to present to our beloved Jedi Master.
Yes, sir.
Pelion hesitated. Admiral, what happens if we get Organa Solo and her twins for Cabal, and he's able to turn them the way he thinks he can? We'd have 4 of them to deal with, then, instead of just 1. 5, if we're able to capture Skywalker at Poderis.
There's no need for concern, Thrawn said, shaking his head. Turning either Organa Solo or Skywalker would take Cabal a great deal of time and effort. It would be even longer before the infants are old enough to be of any danger to us, no matter what he does to them.
Long before any of that occurs, Thrawn's eyes glittered, we'll have come to a suitable arrangement with our Jedi Master over the sharing of power in the Empire. Pelion swallowed.
Understood, sir, he managed.
Good. Then you're dismissed, Captain. Return to the bridge.
Yes, sir.
Pelion turned and headed across the room, the muscles in his throat feeling tight. Yes, he understood all right. Thrawn would come to an arrangement with Cabal, or he would have the Jedi Master killed. If he could. It was not, Pelion decided, a confrontation he would like to place any bets on. Or for that matter, be anywhere near when it happened. Chapter 4 Poderis was one of that select group of worlds generally referred to in the listings as marginal.
planets that had remained colonized, not because of valuable resources or convenient location, but solely because of the stubborn spirit of its colonists. With a disorienting 10-hour rotational cycle, a lowland slough ecology that had effectively confined the colonists to a vast archipelago of tall mesas, and a nearly perpendicular axial tilt that created tremendous winds every spring and autumn, Hoderus was not the sort of place wandering travelers generally bothered with. Its people were tough and independent, tolerant to visitors, but with a long history of ignoring the politics of the outside galaxy. All of which made it an ideal transfer point for the Empire's new clone traffic, and an ideal place for that same Empire to set a trap. The man shadowing Luke was short and plain, the sort of person who would fade into the background almost anywhere he went. He was good at his job, too, with a skill that implied long experience in Imperial intelligence. But that experience had naturally not extended to trailing Jedi Knights. Luke had sensed his presence almost as soon as the man had begun following him, and had been able to visually pick him out of the crowd a minute later, leaving only the problem of what to do about him. R2, Luke called softly into the comlink he'd surreptitiously wedged into the neckband of his hooded robe. We've got company. Probably Imperials. There was a soft, worried trill from the comlink, followed by something that was obviously a question. There's nothing you can do, Luke told him, taking a guess as to the content of the question and wishing 3PO was there to translate. He could generally pick up the gist of what R2 was saying, but in a situation like this, the gist might not be enough. Is there anyone poking around the freighter, or around the landing field in general? R2 chirped a definite negative. Well, they'll be there soon enough, Luke warned him, pausing to look in a shop window. The tail, he noted, moved forward a few more steps before finding an excuse of his own to stop. A professional indeed. Get as much of the pre-flight done as you can without attracting attention. We'll want to get off as soon as I get there. The droid warbled acknowledgement. Reaching to his neck, Luke shut off the comlink and gave the area a quick scan. The first priority was to lose the tail before the Imperials made any more overt moves against him. And to do that, he needed some kind of distraction. 50 meters ahead in the crowd was what looked to be his best opportunity. Another man striding along the street in a robe of similar cut and color to Luke's. Cautiously picking up his pace, trying not to give the appearance of hurrying, Luke moved toward him. The other road figure continued to the T-junction ahead and turned the corner to his right. Luke picked up his pace a bit more, sensing as he did so his shadower's suspicion that he'd been spotted. Resisting the urge to break into a flat-out run, Luke strolled casually around the corner. It was a street like most of the others he'd already seen in the city, wide, rock-paved, reasonably crowded, and lined on both sides with gray stone buildings. Automatically, he reached out with the Force, scanning the area around him and as far ahead as he could sense. And abruptly caught his breath. Directly ahead, still distant but clearly detectable, were small pockets of darkness where his Jedi senses could read absolutely nothing, as if the Force that carried the information to him had somehow ceased to exist or was being blocked. Which meant this was no ordinary ambush for an ordinary New Republic spy. The Imperials knew he was here and had come to Poderes equipped with Isalimiri. And unless he did something fast, they were going to take him. He looked again at the buildings around him, squat two-story structures for the most part, with textured facades and decorative roof parapets. Those to his immediate right were built in a single solid row. Directly across the street to his left, the first building after the T-junction had a warped facade leaving a narrow gap between it and its neighbors. It wasn't much in the way of cover, and the distance itself was going to be a reach, but it was all he had. Hurrying across the street, half expecting the trap to be sprung before he got there, he slipped into the opening. Bending his knees, letting the force flow into his muscles, he jumped. He almost didn't make it. The parapet directly above him was angled and smooth, and for a second he seemed to hang in midair as his fingers scrabbled for a hold. Then he found a grip, and with a surge of effort, pulled himself up and over to lie flat along the rooftop. Just in time, even as he eased one eye over the edge of the parapet, he saw his tail come racing around the corner, all efforts at subtlety abandoned. Shoving aside those in his way, he said something inaudible into the comlink in his hand. And, from the cross street a block away, a row of white-armored stormtroopers stepped into view. Blaster rifles held high against their chests, the dark, elongated shapes of Isale Miri slung on backpack nutrient frames across their shoulders. They cordoned off the end of the street. It was a well-planned, well-executed net, and Luke had maybe 3 minutes to get across the roof and down before they realized their fish had slipped out of it. Easing back from the edge, he turned his head toward the other side of the roof. The roof didn't have another side. Barely 60 centimeters from where he lay, the roof abruptly became a blank wall that angled steeply downward for perhaps 100 meters, extending in both directions as far as Luke could see. Beyond its lower edge, there was nothing but the distant mists in the lowlands beneath the mesa. He'd miscalculated, possibly fatally. Preoccupied with the man shadowing him, he'd completely missed the fact that his path had taken him to the outer edge of the mesa. The slanting wall beside him was one of the massive shield barriers designed to deflect the planet's vicious seasonal winds harmlessly over the city. Luke had escaped the Imperial net, only to discover that there was literally nowhere else for him to go. "Great," he muttered under his breath, easing back to the parapet and looking down into the street. More stormtroopers had joined the first squad now and were beginning to sift through the stunned crowd of people caught in the trap. Behind them, two squads from the other direction of the T-junction had moved in to seal off the rear of the street. Luke's erstwhile shadow, a blaster now gripped in his hand, was pushing his way through the crowd, making for the other robed figure Luke had noticed earlier. The other robed figure. Luke bit at his lip. It would be a rather unfriendly trick to play on a totally innocent bystander. But, on the other hand, the Imperials obviously knew who they were looking for, and just as obviously wanted him alive. Putting the man down there in deadly danger he knew would be unacceptable behavior for a Jedi. Luke could only hope that inconveniencing him wouldn't fall under the same heading. Gritting his teeth, he reached out with the Force and plucked the blaster from the shadow's hand. Spinning it low over the heads of the crowd, he dropped it squarely into the other robed figure's hand. The shadow shouted to the stormtroopers, but what had begun as a call of triumph quickly became a screech of warning. Focusing the Force with all the control he could manage, Luke turned the blaster back toward its former owner and fired. Fired safely over the crowd, of course. There was no possible way for him to aim accurately enough to hit the Imperial, even if he'd wanted to. But even a clean miss was enough to jolt the stormtroopers into action. The Imperials, who'd been checking faces and IDs, abandoned their task to push through the crowd toward the man in the robe, while those guarding the ends of the street hurried forward into backup positions. It was, not surprisingly, too much for the man in the robe. Shaking away the blaster that had inexplicably become attached to his hand, he slipped past the frozen onlookers beside him and disappeared into a narrow alleyway. Luke didn't wait to see any more. The minute anyone got a good look at the fleeing man's face, the diversion would be over, and he had to be off this roof and on his way to the landing field before that happened. Sidling to the edge of his narrow ledge, he looked down. It didn't look promising. Built to withstand 200-kilometer winds, it was perfectly smooth, with no protuberances that could get caught in eddy currents. Nor were there any windows, service doors, or other openings visible. That at least shouldn't be a problem. He could cut himself a makeshift doorway with his lightsaber if it came to that. The real question was how to get out of range of the Imperial's trap before they started hunting him in earnest. He glanced back. And he had to do it fast. From the direction of the official landing area at the far end of the city, the distant specks of airspeeders had begun to appear over the squat city buildings. He couldn't drop back down on the street side without attracting unwelcome attention. He couldn't crawl along the narrow upper edge of the shield barrier, at least not fast enough to get out of sight before the airspeeders got here, which left him only one direction. Down. But not necessarily straight down. He squinted into the sky. Podarus's sun was nearly to the horizon, moving almost visibly through its 10-hour circuit. Right now, its light was shining straight into the eyes of the approaching airspeeder pilots. But within 5 minutes, it would be completely below the horizon, giving the searchers a clear view again, and leaving behind a dusk where a lightsaber blade would be instantly visible. It was now or never. Pulling his lightsaber from beneath his robe, Luke ignited it, making sure to keep the glowing green blade out of sight of the approaching airspeeders. Using the tip, he carefully made a shallow cut to the right and a few degrees down across the slanting shield barrier. His robe was made of relatively flimsy material, and it took only a second to tear off the left sleeve and wrap it around the fingertips of his left hand. The padded fingers slipped easily into the groove he just made, with enough room to slide freely along it. Getting a firm grip, he set the tip of his lightsaber blade into the end of the groove and rolled off the ledge. Supported by his fingertips, the lightsaber held outstretched in his right hand, carving out his path for him as he went, he slid swiftly across and down the shield barrier. It was, at the same time, exhilarating and terrifying. Memories flooded back. The wind whipping past him as he fell through the center core of the cloud city of Bespin, hanging literally by his fingertips barely minutes later beneath the city. Lying exhausted on the floor in the second Death Star, sensing through his pain the enraged helplessness of the Emperor as Vader hurled him to his death. Beneath his chest and legs, the smooth surface of the shield barrier slid past, marking his rapid approach to the edge and the empty space beyond. Lifting his head, blinking against the wind slapping into his face, he looked over his shoulder. The lethal edge was visible now, racing upward toward him at what felt like breakneck speed. Closer and closer it came. And then, at the last second, he changed the angle of his lightsaber. The downward path of his finger guide shifted toward horizontal, and a few seconds later, he slid smoothly to a halt. For a moment, he just hung there, dangling precariously by one hand as he caught his breath and got his heartbeat back under control. Above him, its edge catching the last rays of the setting sun, he could see the groove he'd just cut, angling up and to his left. Over 100 meters to his left, he estimated. Hopefully, far enough to put him outside the Imperial's trap. He'd find out soon enough. Behind him, the sun dipped below the horizon, erasing the thin line of his passage. Moving carefully, trying not to dislodge his straining fingertips, he began to cut a hole through the shield barrier. "Report from the Stormtrooper Commander, Admiral," Pelion called, grimacing as he read it off his comm display. "Skywalker does not appear to be within the cordon." "I'm not surprised," Thrawn said darkly, glowering at his displays. I've warned intelligence repeatedly about underestimating the range of Skywalker's sensing abilities. Obviously, they didn't take me seriously.
Pelion swallowed hard. Yes, sir, but we know he was there, and he couldn't have gotten very far.
The stormtroopers have established a secondary cordon and begun a building-to-building search. Thrawn took a deep breath, then let it out. No, he said, his voice even again. He didn't go into any of the buildings, not Skywalker. That little diversion with the decoy and the blaster.
He looked at Pelion.
Up, Captain. He went up onto the rooftops.
The spotters are already sweeping that direction, Pelion said. If he's up there, they'll spot him.
Good.
Thrawn tapped a switch on his command console, calling up a holographic map of that section of the mesa.
What about the shield barrier on the west edge of the cordon? Can it be climbed?
Our people here say no. Pelion shook his head. Too smooth and too sharply angled, with no lip or other barrier at the bottom. If Skywalker went up that side of the street, he's still there, or at the bottom of the mesa.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. Assign one of the spotters to search that area anyway. What about Skywalker's ship?
Intelligence is still trying to identify which one is his, Pelion admitted. There's some problem with the records. We should have it in a few more minutes.
Minutes which we no longer have, thanks to their shadower's carelessness, Thrawn bit out. He's to be demoted one grade.
Yes, sir, Pelion said, logging the order. A rather severe punishment, but it could have been far worse. The late Lord Vader would have summarily strangled the man. The landing field itself is surrounded, of course.
Thrawn rubbed his chin thoughtfully. A probable waste of time, he said slowly. On the other hand...
He turned his head to gaze out the viewport at the slowly rotating planet.
Pull them off, Captain, he ordered. All except the clone troopers. Leave those on guard near the likeliest possibilities for Skywalker's ship.
Pelion blinked.
Sir?
Thrawn turned back to face him, a fresh glint in those glowing red eyes.
The landing field cordon doesn't have nearly enough Isalamiri to stop a Jedi, Captain, so we won't bother trying. We'll let him get his ship into space and take him with the Chimera.
Yes, sir, Pelion said, feeling his forehead furrow. But then...
Why leave the clones? Thrawn finished for him. Because while Skywalker is valuable to us, the same is not true of his astromech droid.
He smiled slightly.
Unless, of course, Skywalker's heroic efforts to escape Podarus convince it that this is indeed the main conduit for our clone traffic.
Ah, Pelion said, finally understanding. In which case, we find a way to allow the droid to escape back to the rebellion?
Exactly.
Thrawn gestured to Pelion's board.
Orders, Captain.
Yes, sir. Pelion turned back to his board, feeling a cautious stirring of excitement as he began issuing the Grand Admiral's commands. Maybe this time Skywalker would finally be theirs. R2 was jabbering nervously when Luke finally charged through the door of their small freighter and slapped the seal behind him. Everything ready to go? He shouted over his shoulder to the droid as he hurried to the cockpit alcove. R2 trilled back an affirmative. Luke dropped into the pilot's seat, giving the instruments a quick once-over as he strapped himself in.
Okay, he called back. Here we go.
Throwing power to the repulsor lips, Luke kicked the freighter clear of the ground, wrenching it hard to starboard. A pair of skip-ray blast boats rose with him, moving into tandem pursuit formation as he headed for the edge of the mesa.
Watch those skip rays, R2, Luke called, splitting his own attention between the rapidly approaching city's edge and the airspace above them. The fight with those clone troopers guarding the landing field had been intense, but it had been far too brief to be realistic. Either the Empire had left someone totally incompetent in charge, or they'd let him get to his ship on purpose, carefully herding him into the real trap. The edge of the mesa shot past beneath him. Luke threw a quick glance at the rear display to confirm that he was clear of the city, then punched in the main sublight drive. The freighter shot skyward like a scalded Minock, leaving the pursuing skip rays flat-footed in its wake. The official-sounding orders to halt that had been blaring from the board turned into a surprised yelp as Luke reached over and shut the comm off. R2, you all right back there? The droid chirped an affirmative, and a question scrolled across Luke's computer screen. They were clones, all right, he confirmed grimly, an uncomfortable shiver running through him. The strange aura that seemed to surround the Empire's new duplicate humans was twice as eerie up close. I'll tell you something else, too, he added to R2. The Imperials knew it was me they were chasing. Those stormtroopers were carrying Isalimiri on their backs. R2 whistled thoughtfully, gave a questioning gurgle. Right, that whole Delta Source thing, Luke agreed, reading the droid's comment. Leia told me that if we couldn't get the leak closed fast, she was going to recommend we move operations out of the Imperial Palace, maybe even off Coruscant entirely. Though, if Delta Source was a human or alien spy, instead of some impossibly undetectable listening system in the palace itself, moving anywhere would just be so much wasted effort. From R2's rather pointed silence, Luke guessed the droid was thinking that too. The distant horizon, barely visible as dark planet against dark but starlit sky, was starting to show a visible curvature now. Better start calculating our jump to light speed, R2, he called over his shoulder. We're probably going to have to get out of here in a hurry. He got a confirming beep from the droid's position and turned his attention back to the horizon ahead. A whole fleet of Star Destroyers he knew could be lurking below that horizon, out of range of his instruments, waiting for him to get too far from any possible cover to launch their attack. Out of range of his instruments, but perhaps not out of range of Jedi senses. Closing his eyes to slits, flooding his mind with calmness, he stretched out through the Force. He got it an instant before R2's startled warning shrill shattered the air. An Imperial Star Destroyer, all right, but not cutting across his path as Luke had expected. Instead, it was coming up from behind, in an atmosphere-top forced orbit that had allowed it to build up speed without sacrificing the advantages of planetary cover. Hang on, Luke shouted, throwing emergency power to the drive. But it was a futile gesture, and both he and the Imperials knew it. The Star Destroyer was coming up fast, its tractor beams already activated and tracking him. Within a handful of seconds, they were going to get him. Or at least they were going to get the freighter. Luke hit his strap release, opening a disguised panel as he did so, and touching the three switches hidden there. The first switch keyed in the limited autopilot. The second unlocked the aft proton torpedo launcher and started it firing blindly back toward the Star Destroyer. The third activated the freighter's self-destruct. His X-Wing was wedged nose forward in the cargo area behind the cockpit alcove, looking for all the world like some strange metallic animal peering out of its burrow. Luke leaped to the open canopy, coming within an ace of cracking his head on the freighter's low ceiling in the process. R2, already snugged into the X-Wing's droid socket, was jabbering softly to himself as he ran the starfighter's systems from standby to full ready. Even as Luke strapped in and pulled on his flight helmet, the droid signaled they were clear to fly. Okay, Luke told him, resting his left hand on the special switch that had been added to his control board. If this is going to work, we're going to have to time it just right. Be ready. Again, he closed his eyes, letting the force flow through his senses. Once before, on his first attempt to locate the Jedi Master Kabouth, he'd tangled like this with the Imperials, an X-Wing against an Imperial Star Destroyer. That, too, had been a deliberate ambush, though he hadn't realized it until Kabouth's unholy alliance with the Empire had been laid bare. In that battle, skill and luck and the Force had saved him. This time, if the specialists back at Coruscant had done their job right, the luck was already built in. With his mind deeply into the Force, he sensed the locking of the tractor beam a half second before it actually occurred. His hand jabbed the switch, and even as the freighter jerked in the tractor beam's powerful grip, the front end blew apart into a cloud of metallic shards. An instant later, kicked forward by a deck-mounted blast booster, the X-Wing shot through the glittering debris. For a long, heart-stopping moment, it seemed as though the tractor beam was going to be able to maintain its hold despite the obscuring particle fog. Then, all at once, the grip slackened and was gone. "We're free," Luke shouted back at R2, rolling the X-Wing over and driving hard for deep space. "I'm going evasive. Hang on." He rolled the X-Wing again, and as he did so, a pair of brilliant green flashes shot past the transparasteel canopy. With their tractor beams outdistanced, the Imperials had apparently decided to settle for shooting him out of the sky. Another barrage of green flame scorched past, and there was a yelp from R2 as something burned through the deflectors to slap against the X-Wing's underside. Reaching out again to the Force, Luke let it guide his hands on the controls. And then, almost without warning, it was time. Reaching to the hyperdrive lever, Luke pulled it back. With a flicker of pseudo-motion, the X-Wing vanished into the safety of hyperspace, the Chimera's turbolaser batteries still firing uselessly for a second at where it had been. The batteries fell silent, and Pelion let out a long breath, afraid to look over at Thrawn's command station. It was the second time Skywalker had escaped from this kind of trap, and the last time he'd done so, a man had died for that failure. The rest of the bridge crew hadn't forgotten that either. In the brittle silence, the faint rustling of cloth against seat material was clearly audible as Thrawn stood up. "Well," the Grand Admiral said, his voice strangely calm, "one must give the rebels full credit for ingenuity. I've seen that trick work before, but not nearly so effectively." "Yes, sir," Pelion said, trying without success to hide the strain in his voice. Out of the corner of his eye, he could see Thrawn looking at him.
"At ease, Captain," the Grand Admiral said soothingly. "Skywalker would have made an interesting package to present to Master Kabouth, but his escape is hardly cause for major concern. The primary objective of this exercise was to convince the Rebellion that they'd discovered the clone conduit. That objective has been achieved."
The tightness in Pelion's chest began to dissipate. If the Grand Admiral wasn't angry about it...
"That does not mean, however," Thrawn went on, "that the actions of the Chimera's crew should be ignored. Come with me, Captain."
Pelion got to his feet, the tightness returning.
"Yes, sir."
Thrawn led the way to the aft stairway and descended to the starboard crew pit. He walked past the crewers at their consoles, past the officers standing stiffly behind them, and came to a halt at the control station for the starboard tractor beams.
"Your name?"
he said quietly to the young man standing at rigid attention there. "Ensign Mytho," the other said, his face pale but composed, the expression of a man facing his death.
"Tell me what happened, Ensign."
Mythil swallowed. Sir, I had just established a positive lock on the freighter when it broke up into a cluster of track reflective particles. The targeting system tried to lock on all of them at once and went into a loop snarl.
And what did you do?
Sir, I knew that if I waited for the particles to dissipate normally, the target starfighter would be out of range. So I tried to dissipate them myself by shifting the tractor beam into shear plane mode.
It didn't work.
A quiet sigh slipped through Mithil's lips. No, sir. The target lock system couldn't handle it. It froze up completely.
Yes. Thrawn cocked his head slightly. You've had a few moments now to consider your actions, Ensign. Can you think of anything you should have done instead?
The young man's lip twitched. No, sir. I'm sorry, but I can't. I don't remember anything in the manual that covers this kind of situation.
Thrawn nodded. Correct, he agreed. There isn't anything. Several methods have been suggested over the past few decades for counteracting the covert shroud gambit, none of which has ever been made practical. Yours was one of the more innovative attempts, particularly given how little time you had to come up with it. The fact that it failed does not in any way diminish that.
A look of cautious disbelief was starting to edge into Mithil's face. Sir?
The Empire needs quick and creative minds, Ensign, Thrawn said. You're hereby promoted to lieutenant, and your first assignment is to find a way to break a covert shroud. After their success here, the rebellion may try the gambit again.
Yes, sir, Mithil breathed, the color starting to come back into his face. Thank you, sir.
Congratulations, Lieutenant Mithil.
Thrawn nodded to him, then turned to Pelion.
The bridge is yours, Captain. Resume our scheduled flight. I'll be in my command room if you require me.
Yes, sir, Pelion managed.
And stood there beside the newly minted lieutenant, feeling the stunned awe pervading the bridge as he watched Thrawn leave. Yesterday, the Chimera's crew had trusted and respected the Grand Admiral. After today, they would be ready to die for him. And for the first time in 5 years, Pelion finally knew in the deepest level of his being that the old Empire was gone. The new Empire, with Grand Admiral Thrawn at its head, had been born.
The X-Wing hung suspended in the blackness of space, light years away from any solid mass larger than a grain of dust. It was, Luke thought, almost like a replay of that other battle with a Star Destroyer, the one that had left him stranded in deep space, and had ultimately led him to Talon Karda and Mara Jade and the planet Mirkur. Fortunately, appearance was the only thing they had in common. Mostly. From the droid socket behind him came a nervous warble. Come on, R2, relax, Luke soothed him. It's not that bad. We couldn't have made it anywhere near Coruscant without refueling anyway. We'll just have to do it a little sooner, that's all. The response was a sort of indignant grunt. I am taking you seriously, R2, Luke said patiently, keying the listing on his nav display over to the droid. Look, here are all the places we can get to with half our primary power cells blown out. See? For a moment, the droid seemed to mull over the list, and Luke took the opportunity to give it another look himself. There were a lot of choices there, all right. The problem was that many of them wouldn't be especially healthy for a lone New Republic X-Wing to show up at. Half were under direct Imperial control, and most of the others were either leaning that way or keeping their political options open. Still, even on an Imperial-held world, there were sensor gaps a single starfighter could probably slip through. he could put down in some isolated place, make his way on foot to a spaceport, and buy some replacement fuel cells with the Imperial currency he still had left. Getting the cells back to the X-Wing could be a bit of a problem, but nothing he and R2 couldn't solve. R2 chirped a suggestion.
Kessel's a possibility, Luke agreed. I don't know, though. Last I heard, Morath Duel was still in charge there, and Hans never really trusted him. I think we'd do better with Filswing, or even...
He broke off as one of the planets on the list caught his eye. A planet Leia had programmed into his onboard nav system, almost as an afterthought, before he left on this mission. Honor.
I've got a better idea, R2, Luke said slowly. Let's go visit the Nogri.
There was a startled, disbelieving squawk from behind him.
Oh, come on, Luke admonished him. Leia and Chewie went there and got back all right, didn't they? And 3PO, too, he added. You don't want 3PO saying you were afraid to go somewhere he wasn't afraid of, would you?
R2 grunted again. Doesn't matter whether or not he had a choice, Luke said firmly. The point is that he went. The droid gave a mournful and rather resigned gurgle. That's the spirit, Luke encouraged him, keying the nav computer to start the calculation to honor. Leia's been wanting me to go visit them anyway. This way we kill two dune lizards with one throw.
R2 gave a single discomfited gurgle and fell silent. And even Luke, who fully trusted Leia's judgment of the Nogri, privately conceded that it was perhaps not the most comforting figure of speech he could have used.
Chapter 5. The battle data from the Woostery system scrolled to the bottom of the data pad and stopped.
I still don't believe it, Leia said, shaking her head as she laid the data pad back down on the table. If the Empire had a superweapon that could shoot through planetary shields, they'd be using it in every system they attacked. It has to be a trick or illusion of some kind.
I agree, Mon Mothma said quietly. The question is, how do we convince the rest of the Council and the assemblage of that? Not to mention the outer systems themselves.
We must solve the puzzle of what happened at Ukiyo and Woostery, Admiral Akbar said, his voice even more gravelly than usual. And we must solve it quickly.
Leia picked up her data pad again, throwing a quick look across the table at Akbar as she did so. This book is continued on cassette number 3, side 1.